This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. Early childhood experiences have a profound impact on the way human beings develop, from core functions like talking and walking to more nuanced emotional responses. What happens to us in our early years quite literally changes our lives.
ACEs, an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences, are at epidemic proportions in Milwaukee, according to researchers at UWM. Dr. Dimitri Tapitsas and Dr. Joshua Mirsky are both associate professors at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. They helped launch the Institute of Child and Family Well-Being, where they research the impact of ACEs and look for ways to solve these issues.
Tapitsas and Mirsky sat down with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and Dr. Tapitsas starts by describing the different types of ACEs first identified by researchers in the initial CDC Kaiser study, which was published in 1998.
They identified five forms of abuse or neglect and five forms of household dysfunction. Abuse or neglect being childhood physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect being physical or emotional neglect. And then there were five forms of household dysfunction that oftentimes attend these different forms of abuse and neglect, including divorce or separation of a parent, the parent who's been incarcerated or a family member has been incarcerated, family member who's struggling with substance abuse, a family member who's struggling with mental health-related issues, including suicidality, and then finally, intimate partner violence. So these 10 experiences of abuse or neglect or household dysfunction constitute the adverse childhood experiences that we consider as the 10 original ACEs. And it just so happens a couple of themes emerged from the study of these adverse childhood experiences in the mid-1990s. Number one, they occur at much higher rates than initially thought of. Number two, they tend to cluster. So that if somebody experiences one adverse childhood experience, the likelihood is that they're going to experience two or more. And number three, and perhaps most importantly, these adverse experiences, including abuse or neglect, forecast poor health later in life. And by poor health, we mean something as base as poor physical health, heart disease, cancer, cardiopulmonary obstructive disorder, et cetera. But we also mean something as nuanced as poor behavioral health, like alcoholism, or poor mental health, like depression or anxiety. And the public health revolution that emerged in the mid-1990s by virtue of this original ACE study was that we realized that exposure to these 10 different events was related to poor health in a dose-response manner. In other words, the greater the number of adversities to which I am exposed, the more likely my health later in life is going to be compromised.
Now, you said the prevalence of ACEs was much higher than initially expected. How much higher are we talking about?
Well, the original ACE study, which was conducted with over 14,000 sample members of a San Diego health maintenance organization, found that well over 60% of the sample, and this was a middle-class sample that had health insurance, well over 60% of that sample had been exposed to one adverse childhood experience. And these experiences are, quote-unquote, traumatic in nature. Again, anything from exposure to sexual abuse, exposure to intimate partner violence, exposure to household incarceration. And these were epidemiological figures, in other words, prevalence rates that were much higher than we expected to see. One caveat is that second-generation studies, including studies that Joshua Mirsky and myself have conducted, have indicated that when we replicate this survey or these measures, these ACE measures amongst low-income, high-risk samples, for instance, that hail from central city neighborhoods of Milwaukee, then the prevalence rates of exposure to adverse childhood experience actually increases significantly. So from 60-some percent, now we're talking about 80 to 90-some percent of the sample have been exposed to at least one childhood adversity. So second-generation studies have found that not only is this a public health problem, but it's a deep-end social welfare problem, meaning that those who are of low-income and high-risk nature, those who grow up in low-income, high-crime neighborhoods, for instance, are exposed to adversity at even higher rates than those original numbers suggested.
Now, there was a piece recently in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that drew on work, on both of your work. It said that there was an epidemic of ACEs in Milwaukee. When we're talking about an epidemic, what do we really mean by that?
Rates of exposure to adversity are nearly universal, meaning that nearly 100% of the sample has been exposed to at least one childhood adversity. So, for instance, I conducted a study with patients who are accessing community-based primary care clinics in high-risk neighborhoods of Milwaukee. And what we found is that well over 90% acknowledged exposure to at least one adverse childhood experience. And then what we also found is that the implications of this exposure manifested as health-related problems, mental health-related problems, behavioral health-related problems. So an epidemic, meaning that the vast majority of adults raised in high-crime and low-income neighborhoods of Milwaukee have been exposed to significant adversity. And that exposure has implications for health and well-being.
When we're talking about the implications of ACEs later in life, what are we really talking about? It seems like, at least according to your studies, that people who have had, who've been affected by more ACEs, as it were, have a much higher chance of having alcoholism, having adverse kind of life outcomes.
That's right. Right. These are all probabilities. That's exactly right. There's nothing is predetermined or set in stone. These are all probabilities. If I've been exposed to, say, four or more different types of adverse childhood experiences, the chances that I will engage in addictive behaviors of one kind or another are much increased, sometimes in the order of a magnitude of seven, as opposed to if I had not been exposed to any form of childhood adversity. So exactly right. We're talking about probabilities here.
So you're in Milwaukee. We're in Milwaukee right now. And a lot of your studies look at Milwaukee specifically. But is the city different than other cities? Do we know if how Milwaukee compares to even someplace close like Chicago or Detroit?
What we can say is that the original ACE study that Dimitri mentioned is sort of the ship that launched 1,000 ships. There have been many replication studies since that original study. And basically, study after study has shown that ACEs are prevalent and consequential, right? And so there is no reason to believe that Milwaukee is in some way unique from many other urban centers across this land. What I will say, however, is that we would be remiss if we painted ACEs as something that is unique to an urban landscape. Actually, in our research, we found that within Wisconsin, rates of ACEs are actually even higher among rural populations than they are in urban populations. In fact, we found that American Indians as well as Caucasians who live in rural communities report even higher rates of adverse childhood experiences than do Latinas and African Americans from, say, Milwaukee or Racine.
Now, how are these studies generally being conducted?
Again, excellent question. The vast majority of the research is based on self-report, which makes a lot of sense, right? So what we do is, and Dimitri and I have developed a tool, for example, called the Childhood Experiences Survey that we use. And it's very simple. You sit down with someone and ask them questions, or you can administer it through a paper and pencil survey and just, for example, in a primary care setting, you can just give somebody a clipboard and have them fill out this kind of survey. In fact, there are online tools where you can go online and get your ACE score, if you will. There are some limitations to that approach. Self-report is, you know, subject to certain kinds of biases, memory bias, subjectivity, et cetera. But until somebody figures out a better way to capture someone's experience other than their own personal report, then that's what we're pretty much left with.
When we think especially of like community violence, a word that I think gets bandied around a lot is PTSD. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about ACEs, how do they contribute to something like PTSD?
That's a great question. So PTSD is a mental health diagnosis that has generally worked relatively well when capturing a one-time event, exposure to a one-time event primarily in adulthood. But it doesn't do an exceptionally accurate job of capturing symptom clusters that emerge after exposure to multiple traumatic events that take place in childhood. So whether or not PTSD describes the aftermath, the mental health, for instance, mental health diagnosis that might emerge subsequent to exposure to a number of early adverse childhood experiences is really up for question. And there are a good deal of trauma studies experts who would argue that PTSD only captures, say, a sliver or a particular sort of segment of experience for those who have been exposed to early adversity. Exposure to these types of events early in life can lead to really distinct outcomes across a number of different individuals. So in one person, it ultimately might manifest as PTSD, but it could very well manifest as depression or as physical ailment or as a substance use disorder with some underlying problems when it comes to the term that's often used is self-regulation. Ultimately, exposure to early adversity, it appears anyway, ultimately undermines one's ability to regulate and manage their own emotions, their relationships, their identity. It tends to be a problem of regulation, of self-regulation, for reasons that we could talk about at some length. Exposure to adversity tends to be a regulatory problem, and it could manifest as PTSD, but it could manifest as a number of other types of presentations.
Well, looking at a different kind of regulatory problem, I guess, when we know that we have such a high prevalence of ACEs, what do we do? What are the next steps? We recognize that there's an issue. How do we fix things?
I think that's really the frontier of second-generation ACE research is answering that so what question, Joy. And that is, again, what Dimitri and I dedicate a lot of our work to trying to unlock that puzzle. So we collaborate together at the Institute for Child and Family Well-Being, which is a partnership between UW-Milwaukee and Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. And much of what we focus on is translating the knowledge that has been generated from studies like the original ACE study and trying to figure out how can we apply that knowledge and translate it into meaningful programs and policies that can help to either remediate the effects of ACEs. So for people who have been exposed to ACEs, what can we do to help reduce their pain and suffering? But also then ultimately, what can we do to potentially prevent ACEs from occurring in the first place? And we have some preliminary ideas along those lines that we have out in the field. So I'll talk about one potential approach. So in my role at UWM and at the Institute, I have been the lead evaluator for the state's Family Foundation's home visiting program since 2011. And home visiting programs, for those people who are maybe not be familiar with them, they're a broad class of interventions that are designed primarily to work with economically disadvantaged families, primarily women, and women who are either pregnant or who recently gave birth. These programs are diverse in nature, but what they tend to try to do is to promote maternal and child health. So when a woman is pregnant, making sure that she stays healthy, that she's mentally healthy, she's eating properly, et cetera, and that she has healthy birth outcomes. Second goal of these programs is to promote positive and sensitive parenting practices, right, to promote healthy attachment and to certainly reduce the risk of, say, abuse and neglect. And the third goal of these programs is to promote child development, to make sure that children are developing appropriately over time. Well, one of the things that we've done within the context of these programs is to actually integrate this assessment tool that I mentioned earlier, the Childhood Experiences Survey that Dimitri and I developed. And basically what happens is home visitors now, as a result of our work with the state, they now go out during their home visits after they've established rapport with these families, and they ask these women about their experiences of adversity during childhood. And they use that tool now as an opportunity to learn more about the family, to learn more about their experiences, but also to guide their practice with the family, and potentially to use it as a means of referring families to particular services, but also potentially to help the caregivers gain greater insight into their own personal histories and how their own histories may be linked to particular challenges or difficulties that they're facing in their current life. So it, to sum up, one approach that we can do, one thing that we can do to address ACEs is to ask about them. And there's been a long debate sort of in the literature about, should we ask people about their adversity? Should we be asking them about their trauma? And what the research will tell you is that there is a resounding yes to that question, that actually the vast majority of people not only are able to tolerate those kinds of questions, but many people actually appreciate being asked about their histories.
Well, thank you both so much for coming in and sharing your work with me, and I look forward to hearing more about it.
Thanks so much, Jordan.
Thank you.
Dr. Dimitri Tipitsis and Dr. Joshua Mirsky are both associate professors at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee. Together, along with the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, they launched the Institute of Child and Family Well-Being. They spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and for more information, head to WUWM.com.